Yes.
Hi, patrons. It is time to tell you about the new Sailor Moon store opening in Tokyo.
Woohoo!
So, I have all the details.
With the scoop, our on-the-scene reporter, Shannon Morse.
So, you know, I'm actually going to do that.
There is enough Sailor Moon stuff to have a big store, yes?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So they're opening it up on September 23rd in Harajuku in Tokyo, and it's going to carry all the official Sailor Moon branded merchandise, as well as any kind of co-ops that they're doing. Like they did some Sailor Moon bags, like purses, with a company called Samantha Vega in Japan. So they're going to be selling those, and they'll be selling like perfume and makeup and stuff like that. That they
it's
also
the only one
other...
in the world.
It's the only time that there's ever been an official Sailor Moon store, and I can't tell you how freaking excited I am.
That's pretty
That's
cool.
No
oh my
god. Sailor Moon
how
store.
Excited
That's
are
a
you?
Sailor space station.
Oh my god! I'm so excited.
You know,
get Sailor Moon cakes. Celebrate
Sailor Moon pies.
Sailor Moon pies.
For my birthday a couple years ago, my friend made me a. It was shaped like Luna the cat's head. It's so cute. It had a little crescent moon. It was adorable.
See, that's interesting. Like, I mean, I guess I don't know that much about Sailor Moon, but like,
you should.
I probably should. Yes. No. But like, I'm glad to hear that there's enough merchandise for a store. You know, when I went to New York, I was really surprised how much. Like they have an M&M store there, and it's like three floors. I'm like, is it really that much M&M store stuff? I mean, and there is a lot of M&M stuff.
Yeah. I'm imagining it'll probably be similar to the Pokemon Center, which is just like there's a couple of Pokemon centers around Japan, and they're pretty big stores, and they have tons and tons of merchandise. So, given how many things I try to keep myself from buying of Sailor Moon online and shipping here from Japan, I assume that they'll be just as big. Oh my god. Gonna be incredible. I recently had a dream about shopping in a Sailor Moon store, and I was like, my dream is officially coming true. This is amazing. I told my husband that I was gonna go and I was gonna buy everything, and then he was like, don't buy everything, and I was like, okay, I won't, but I'm still going to buy everything.
That's probably why they opened it up, because of their Quanta is probably scanning the deep web for your tweets.
They knew.
That's why.
They know purchasing habits. Maybe eBay is one of their customers, and they're getting all the purchasing habits from Sailor Moon fans there. And they're like, wow, there's a lot of those. We should get an official Sailor Moon store.
Wouldn't be surprised.
Oh man, I'm so excited. I've gotten lucky too. This is the second time that I've traveled to Japan, and it just so happens to coincide with something big for Sailor Moon happening.
That's
last
cool.
year
when
was
you,
the
when are you going to Japan?
November.
November, nice.
I'm so excited.
I've never been.
I'm using Duolingo to learn some more Japanese.
Oh yeah, they didn't have as good of a Japanese program when I went to Japan last year, but I know they've added a bunch of cool stuff since then.
Oh right, yeah.
I used Memrise.
They just added it to Android, so I started using it. It helps though that I already knew some Japanese, so I was able to.
No, you were like reading things at the Japanese restaurant that one time.
Yeah,
because that's all they had. All they had on Duolingo when I went was hiragana lessons. So I went to Memrise to get like.
Hiragana, katakana, or hiragana.
Katakana.
What is hiragana? Okay.
So,
hiragana is for like regular talk, just regular words. Gotcha. And katakana is more for words that derive from English or
from foreign words. So words that aren't that are borrowed into Japanese.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So there's essentially three writing systems: hiragana, katakana, and kanji. Kanji is mostly derived from Chinese. Hiragana is...
Kanji is the pictograms, where like one symbol represents a whole word.
Remember, I had to do this in Japan. Oh, so hard. And it's interesting because loan words are represented with phonetics, like symbols that represent phonics, which is... It's kind of a weird mishmash, almost, and it's really interesting because you have to learn all three, Although the kanji, you only know, it's not as bad as Chinese where you need to know like 1,000 or so to actually read.
Luckily in Japanese, a lot of times they'll have kanji, but then right underneath the kanji, they'll have like hiragana and katakana written in smaller text that means the same thing. So if you just know hiragana and katakana, you'll be fine. So that's what I'm doing.
If I went over, I would
be all the lost. Signs in the subways and stuff are in hiragana.
Yeah. And they're all English.
And usually in English, yeah. Good point.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. That would be completely lost.
Google Maps works over there just fine. Yeah. If anybody ever visits Japan,
like, you just need to know sumimasen.
Yep.
And kudasai and arigato gozaimasu.
How to order beer. That's all I needed.
Biru kudasai.
Biru.
Yep, my daughter just returned from Russian language camp last
week. Oh, yeah, that's right. How'd it go?
It was only a week? I thought it was like...
It was 2 weeks. It was 2 weeks. Yeah, she was gone for 2 weeks. It went really well. She was, you know, she was really excited. She was glad to be home, for sure. But I only learned one piece of Russian, so when she came home, I could say, to say hi, you say privyet. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
When I saw her, I gave her a big hug. I said, privyet.
Oh my gosh. If you wanna freak her out, next time she does something really good, like it doesn't have to be a huge thing, but you know, you ask her to, you know, chop some celery and she finishes, say molodets.
Molodets.
Molodets, exactly.
Molodets. What is that?
It means good job, kind of.
Molodets, okay.
Yeah. It's what teachers often say that when they're like asking you a question and you answer correctly, they're like molodets.
Molodets. Oh, I'll do that because she was cooking this afternoon.
And perfect.
Molodets. You'd probably be like, what are you saying? What's wrong with you?
Yeah, it's more like I asked you to do something, you did it well. Молодец.
Yes. Молодец.
Well done.
Молодец. Bless you.
Боже мой. That's my God.
Боже мой.
Bless you.
She's making she was making some sort of Russian potato pancake or trying to at
least latkes
this
or
afternoon.
Something?
Yeah. I don't know what they were called. She had a name for them, but we went out this afternoon after latkes lunch and bought Polish, some. I think, we went out Pirogi. After lunch and bought some potatoes for her.
Nice.
We didn't have any potatoes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the thing I remember about Russian class in University of Illinois was all of the teachers found excuses to come in and cook borscht and things with potatoes and drink vodka.
she was complaining that the first day she had her choice of either mushroom soup or fish pie. And she was like, yeah, great.
Yeah.
Her two favorite things.
Oh, mushrooms are great.
I love mushrooms. She does not like mushrooms. So.
Yeah,
well, she is probably one of your less popular offspring.
None of my kids like mushrooms. It's like they all think I'm crazy.
I didn't get your mushroom gene. Like mushrooms?
I don't know. I love them.
Does your wife like mushrooms?
It's genetic. Some people things don't taste the same to all people.
She just thinks, her mother thinks that they're real slimy and gross, and so she passed that on to
them. Well, it's because they're cooking it wrong.
No. It's like cilantro. It just tastes different to some people.
I don't think they like the texture. That's what it is.
Or the texture.
I love the texture. It's like the
I love it, too. No, I'm with you, Roger. I'm like, I think it's terrific. I love them. I could eat. My mom used. I used to go visit my mom, and she'd make a huge tureen of mushrooms just for me.
Yelling at people for not liking a particular food is like yelling at a colorblind person for not being able to see green.
Why can't you see green, Tom?
What's wrong with you?
I used to nag Dan Mitchell about that all the time.
About not being able to see green.
What's wrong with you?
What are you, colorblind? Oh, right. You are actually colorblind. Sorry.
All right, let's go grab lunch.
As long as you can tell the lettuce from the tomato.
What is it? It's all green to you, or blue, or absent.
Gray. I just still think it's the worst prank in the world that we made stoplights green and red.
Actually, no. It's because they're all stoplights have a specific position.
No, I know, but it would hate to be colorblind. That's all.
I'm colorblind. I'm red green colorblind. I don't have much of a problem. It's what happens is it's certain shades of red and green are hard to see.
Mm-hmm. So you don't have, you can see the difference between a red and a green stoplight.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. That's like cool. I know what green is. I know what red is. But if it's like a certain, like greens and reds, like darker greens, darker reds, sometimes don't
blend.
A brown. Oh, that's interesting. Yes. Yeah. It's a brown. So. Wait, what's that?
Same thing happens to Keith. He's partially like you.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's partially an artist.
Yeah, I would say go get that green that green throw or something, and it'd be like, what green throw? We don't own one. It's, you know, it's like, oh, it's yeah. Or I'd say go get that brown one or something, and it's like that's gray or something. So and sometimes
you rely a lot on RGB values.
Yes, that's how I when I'm coloring and stuff like that, I can memorize where they are in the spectrum. Mm-hmm. So I can move it up and down, and I've memorized that.
Oh wow.
If you asked me to kind of mix a color, it'd be a lot more difficult. Yeah.
Why you got fired from Sherwin Williams.
Yes. Well, I got fired from Sherwin Williams for covering the earth in paint. You know, like that the globe.
That's where it came from. Yes. Len just got crazy one day.
Oh yes, thank you. Just put that down. My little son. My
special delivery. My
coworker
completely colorblind. So sometimes he'll come in my office. All he sees is grays. And sometimes he'll come in my office and be like, hey, Snubs, you know style. Does this match? And he'll just look at his clothes and I'll be like, yes, it matches. Yeah. Or I'll be like, no, not quite.
Yeah. I had a teacher in high school that had to have
orange and the neon green.
On business trips, like he'd be at the bar or something, and he would just basically talk to him. And it's like, hey, I'm colorblind. Would you mind coming back to my hotel room and actually just helping me pick out my
outfit? Help me dress.
Because I can't tell. And he said it worked pretty well. I mean, he was colorblind, so he was like blue-green.
Would he use that as a pickup line?
Yeah.
I never even thought of doing that.
Hey baby, really want to dress me?
Well, he didn't start out that way. He would just say like, "Yeah, I'm not trying to pick you up. I just really need help picking this
up. I'm not trying to pick you up, except I'm totally trying to pick you up."
Hey, yeah. Darren's in the chat room.
He is.
Oh, hey, creeping. Darren. Oh, Darren can't hear me because we're not live yet.
I need to launch.
I need to give you control, Roger.
Yes.
So this weekend, I am going to, I don't know why I decided to do this, but I decided I'm going to be in my first cosplay contest as Spider-Man.
Oh, nice.
I'll see how it goes.
I want pictures.
We'll see how it goes. Contest? It's a little itty bitty tiny con here in Cleveland called the Northeast Ohio Con. And I was just like, I was looking for, only reason I know about it is because I was like, I'm looking for excuses to wear the stupid thing, you know? So I'm like, and then I'm like, hey, maybe I'll go enter the contest and see what happens. I don't know if I'm going to do it or not, but I'm going in thinking that I'm going to do it.
Oh, there's the judges.
That's the judges. I got to call them.
We'd like to declare you already the winner.
Man, I should just get rid of my landline.
Why do you have a landline?
I have no idea. Because it came as a package. So it's you know, like I'm like stupid.
I used to have a landline mostly just to open the front gate at my apartment complex.
Uh-huh.
Oh yeah.
And then I discovered that there's a universal code, so I just started using that and I canceled my phone.
Well, see, I was thinking, oh well, I would, you know, maybe I'll drop the line and try to get like a better internet plan or something, and I'm only gonna save like $10, and it's I don't know, it's a hassle.
You found a back door to your front door.
You should watch there's a show online. It's called Cord Killers.
Oh yeah, I've heard about that. Is that good?
Well, I mean, it's got one good host, the guy in Texas, but the other guy.
Oh my gosh, I had a dream. I had a dream about Brushwood. He was in my dream. So was Justin.
You had a dream? Oh, I'm telling him.
I did. He was. We were at. I don't remember all the details, but we were. He was performing at some sort of like a geek sort of club. like a Chuck E. Cheese, but geek themed.
And Chuck E. Geeks.
Chuck E. Geeks. And I was like, oh man, this is awesome. This is like a perfect venue for you. And like, I remember details. Like, I remember they would pass out these old Darth Vader heads and you'd open them up and there'd be candy inside of them. And one of the things I got was like, oh, there's like a little tiny, like there's like a peanut butter cup inside.
This
and
is another one. This is all
this is in my dream. This is so yes. detailed. I know. It's crazy. I've been having these crazy vivid dreams recently. I opened up another one. It had all these kind of geek themed stickers. So I was like decorating the place in these stickers. It was cool. And then Justin, it was like, I was like, oh, hey, Brian, do you look at my, because my son Max was in my dream. I go, look at my son Max. Does he look like Justin? But it was really Justin. Like, but he's like, yeah, it looks just like Justin.
Wow.
Like, yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing.
That's funny.
Crazy. Yeah. I should just do an entire podcast just talking about my dreams.
You should. Roger's been writing up his dreams. He's got amazing dreams too. You guys can co-host.
Yeah. Dreams?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I haven't been writing them as much because I was interrupted by a baby crying in the middle of the night and I forget in the morning.
Yeah. I see. But, I end up telling Nora. She loves when I tell her.
So the craziest one I told Tom was when the dogs took over.
Yeah.
And the canines.
I love this one.
Bipedal. And it was weird because Django, I was telling him, Django was like the president of a media company that I was working for.
That's so great.
It was kind of, it started off as a weird horror thing. It was weird. It was like an island, you know, filled with, like, it was like kind of like a Ren Fair kind of thing, like with craftsmen and stuff. And it was just something a little odd. And I noticed that all the people were dogs. And they were very
I want this animated.
Anti-human. Like humans were to be subjugated and watched closely as they could not be trusted.
There's got to be a podcast like this, right?
Yeah.
What does it mean, podcast? And you all just right. like you walk it out.
We will revisit this in 30 to 40 minutes.
Yeah, look at the time. Holy yeah. crap!
Hey. You guys ready? Daily Tech News Show is powered just by its listeners. That's you. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support. This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, August 18th, 2017. I'm Tom Merritt. Joining me today is Ms. Shannon Morse. Welcome back.
Thank you. How are you doing, Mr. Merritt?
I am doing well. Shannon, of course, the host of Tech Thing, Threatwire, Hack 5, and more, and joins us from time to time here to talk some tech on Fridays a lot of the time when Len Peralta is here as well.
Hey, that's a good Friday. That's what I say.
That's what they say. That's why it's called that, actually.
That's right. When Shannon and I are on the show together, that's a good Friday.
Yeah, and then you have to eat fish.
That's right.
Or fish pie.
You don't have to eat fish.
That of course, is Roger Chang refusing to eat fish. He's the producer of the show. How's it going, Roger?
Good. I eat certain fish, just not all fish.
I eat all fish. I love all fish. We're not here to talk about fish. We're here to talk about tech. In fact, we're going to talk about the deep web, the dark web, the difference between the two, and a company that is one of the few that is mining it for gold. For data gold, I guess. Let's start with a few tech things you should know. Asus just launched 6 new Zenfone 4 models, all of them with dual cameras. The Zenfone 4, the only one that doesn't have another name, the Zenfone 4 will start at $399. The Zenfone 4 Pro starts at $599. There's also the Zenfone 4 Selfie, the Selfie Pro, the Max, and the Max Pro. The Maxes have a 5,000 milliamp hour battery.
They're cute. You know, I've always thought that Asus Zenfones, they did a really good job with the ones that I've gotten in hand to review so far. And they've always been really good mid-price phones. But yeah. I've never had any of them like really stand out like, wow, this is one feature that's amazing. Other than I believe there was one that had dual SIM. But now you can find that in different ones like the OnePlus 5. So
yeah. Yeah, they're good-looking phones.
A new option in the public beta of iOS 11 lets users press the power button 5 times to disable Touch ID and bring up the option to call emergency services. This sounds really interesting. I just hope whoever is doing this make sure that they set a really, really good pin code, because if your pin is just like 1234, it kind of negates the entire purpose.
Yeah, I mean, it's good for the emergency services no matter what, but you're right. If you're using this to disable Touch ID from your login, a lot of times law enforcement can just ask you to give you your password to give the, you know, I mean, there are cases where the judges have upheld that. So this isn't a be all end all to ending access to your phone, but yeah. It's a nice tab. China opened the Hongshu Internet Court Friday, with its first case being about copyright. It was a dispute between an online writer and a web company. Defendants and plaintiffs appear in this cyber court before a judge by video chat. So they're essentially Skyping in. I don't know if they're using Skype, what they're using, but they don't have to show up at the court. Court is meant to deal with a rise in internet-related claims. It's China's cyber court.
That's so cool. You know, there's only been like two occasions where I've had to be in a court for some kind of thing. But every single time it always feels like it takes so much time out of your way just to travel there and everything. That would be useful for any court, I feel like. Yeah. Just be able to Skype in.
Can you imagine if you could do jury duty that way?
Oh, man, that'd be great.
I mean, I know there's problems. I already hear you writing your email, but
I do too.
I like the idea if we could fix those problems.
Instagram now lets you reply to direct messages with a photo or video. The reply automatically includes a sticker or whatever you are replying to. You can also choose to send your reply as a split screen. Ah, that's so funny.
Yeah.
I love the idea of being able to send a picture with like my cat's head instead of my head.
Well, yeah. So if you send me a picture of your cat, I can do the split screen and then put your cat's head on my head and send it back to you. Yeah. That's pretty great. All right, here's some more top stories. Bloomberg reports its sources say Apple and Comcast are in talks with the movie studios like Warner Brothers and Comcast's own Universal on a project to make movies available for home viewing in as little as 17 days after the release in theaters. Prices would be expensive. They'd be rentals, and you might have to pay $50 to see it, but you wouldn't have to go to the theater. Now, theater owners have been objecting to this. There have been negotiations about it, but it sounds, according to the Bloomberg report, like Comcast and Apple and the movie studios are all willing to just walk away from the theaters and say, you know what, we're just going to implement it without you then, if you won't compromise on anything. Of course, that could lead to a big battle. Theaters could try to stop carrying movies from, let's say, Warner Brothers and Universal do this. They could stop carrying Warner Brothers and Universal movies in retaliation.
I feel like this would be great for like little indie theaters, because then they could just purchase them for $50 or whatever it might be. But yeah, there could be some issues with the current theaters that we have, the like really big names like AMC and such.
Yeah, well, and I think there were going to be restrictions on this. You're not going to be able to display it to more than your family. It's going to be for home use only. Like they're mm-hmm. trying to do some things for the theaters to say we're not going to make this your competitor. But come on, guys, we're losing DVD revenue and we've got to make it up. You make almost all your money on a movie in the first week anyway. So let's shorten that 90-day window.
I'd be okay with this, especially if I would just want to rent something and have a little movie night. That'd be really fun.
Yeah. I wish somebody could come up with a way that this also benefits the theaters somehow. Like maybe you get a discount on concessions when you buy these, which encourages you to want to go in and see the movie, mm-hmm. or I don't know, something like that. Would you pay $50 though? Would you pay $50 to see a 17-day-old movie?
No.
Len is like, no. And Len's got a family, right? The idea is like, hey, this will save you money because you stay home.
Price point needs to be worked on, but the idea is great. We've actually talked about it on the show, but the price point, a little bit too high, I think. Yeah.
If they dropped it, I would do it totally.
Yeah, it's a little expensive. Google will launch the final version of Android O at 2:40 p.m. Eastern in New York City on Monday, August 21st, coinciding with the solar eclipse. The event will be live streamed and a countdown is up at android.com/eclipse. So my question is anybody in that Eastern area going to watch the Android O announcement, or will they be too busy watching the eclipse?
Yeah, if Google's smart, they just live stream the eclipse, then make their announcement.
That's what I would do if I was Google.
You don't want to compete with that right now. I'm sorry. It's just, it's what everybody wants to pay attention to. The other question is, it's it's Oreos, right? There was an attachment to a post from Google on Google Plus that referenced Oreo in the file name. Like, it's got to be Oreo, Android Oreo.
Yeah, it must be. I don't know. There must be some trademark agreement there if they do go with Oreo.
They did that with Kit Kat. They didn't. Yes. There was no paid swap, but they got them to agree to let them use the name. Are there? Right. Is there? Put it this way: is there anything that it wouldn't other than Oreo that it could be? And there's Orangina.
Can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Yeah, I can't think of anything either. A quick clarification. According to that Bloomberg story, one of the things on the price point that they're considering is dropping the price of that rental to $30 after 30 days. So it'd be $50 right at 17 days, but it would drop the longer time goes by. So I don't know if that makes a difference.
Okay.
The Verge's Vlad Savov is a level-headed and equitable technology reporter. I respect his work greatly. He's been on The Verge for a long time. He's been covering tech for years. He has a preview up of the next phone from LG with the headline, "The LG V30 has me more excited than the new iPhone." Now, because Mr. Savov is a rational man, the text of the article is a little bit less incendiary, responsibly laying out the decline in smartphone innovation, giving props to design and feature advances made in the most recent Android phones. And he even admits that you may ask while reading his article, when has it ever been a good idea to get hyped up about an LG phone? But he points out that the V series brought an excellent camera in the V10, brought audiophile quality audio in the V20, and that the V30 has a nice refined design with a 6-inch bezel-less screen. That refined design was the last piece of the puzzle. Savov also speculates the V30 may be the foundation on which the Google Pixel XL is built, as LG is building the XL for Google. Now, he closes his piece by admitting that the Galaxy Note 8 will likely overshadow the V30, followed by a new iPhone, which always gets a lot of buzz. But something about LG's plucky new flagship phone has warmed even that cold and calloused heart of a Verge reporter. So well done, LG.
Oh, wow. That's probably my favorite story all day, just because of how well you expressed this story. It sounds amazing.
Vlad is cold and calloused. I'm just saying, anybody like us, right, Shannon, who's covered technology, we get a little calloused to things.
Yeah, of course. And that's what I was going to mention is that, you know, after you do so many reviews of different Android phones, especially Android phones, not necessarily iPhones, you find that you see the same product done over and over and over in slightly different ways, and it gets a little bit boring. So I can fully understand why he would say that smartphone innovation has been kind of on the decline lately. But with the LG phone, it does look like a really competitive phone. It's just kind of unfortunate that LG as a brand, as a smartphone maker, doesn't get as much marketing or press as the bigger names like Samsung, Google, and iPhone.
Yeah. Well, if you're in the market for a new phone, or if you're following Android phones or smartphones in general, Go read up at theverge.com. The V30 may change your mood as well.
All right. And moving on, executive director of Electronic Frontier Foundation, Cindy Cohn, co-authored a blog post with staffers Jeremy Malcolm and Danny O'Brien criticizing tech companies for removing neo-Nazi groups from their services, calling it, quote, dangerous. The group wrote, quote, "Protecting free speech is not something we do because we agree with all of the speech that gets protected. We do it because the power to decide who gets to speak and who doesn't is just too dangerous to hand to any company or any government." Cloudflare CEO Matthew Prince told Reuters. He wholeheartedly agreed with the EFF post.
So this is surprising for some people, I think, because a lot of folks have been cheering these tech companies on, and the EFF is usually on the side of human rights. But that's what Cindy Cohn and her fellow staffers are saying, is the same thing that Matthew Prince said. And we talked about this a lot on yesterday's show, which is all the power for deciding what gets allowed and what isn't shouldn't be concentrated in a small number of hands.
Right, absolutely. And I've seen some similar cases with the ACLU recently, and it really comes down to law, whether or not we agree with the people that are speaking. It's law.
Yeah, there needs to be something that is outside of your own emotional reaction to something at mm-hmm. the moment. That's why we have judges and laws, is so that we're not run by mob rule. That doesn't mean, in fact, it is meant for the things that make you angry. It's meant for the things that you think are vile and disgusting.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. U.S. District Court's Judge David Hale dismissed with prejudice, which means you can't bring it back, I think, AT&T's lawsuit against the city of Louisville over its plans to make it easier for competing ISPs to gain access to utility poles. We've talked about this on the show before. It's the one-touch make-ready rule that says if you are a new ISP or even an old ISP that's moving into a new area, Google Fiber is the one in this case that's highlighted the most, and you want to go make some wire adjustments to add your wire to the poles, and you have permission to do this, right? Then they can't stop you from doing that. Previously, the pole owners would be able to make the new ISPs wait months sometimes before they would come out and send some guy to move some wires over. So these new one-touch make-ready rules say in certain cases, when all you're doing is lifting up some wires to put your wires in and then put them back down, you're allowed mm-hmm. to do that. Now, AT&T argued like, yeah, you say it's simple, but it can mess a lot of things up. And we really need people who are our people because we own the poles to do this. And it's our poles anyway. What the judge said was, you may own the pole, but you don't own the right-of-way. It's the city that gave you the right-of-way to put those poles there in the first place. So if the city makes rules about how the poles you put in the right-of-way are used, then the city gets to do that.
Right, yeah. And I'm glad that they made that ruling, because if they didn't, we would end up with like a monopoly.
Yeah. Well, and that's possibly. That's nope, not even possibly, right? Like, that's why you see so few competitors, is mm-hmm. it's really difficult to roll out a new ISP. Now, some of that is difficulty of infrastructure that is just because it's a hard thing to do, but some of it is artificial difficulty like this.
Right.
Hey, folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to Daily Tech Headlines at dailytechheadlines.com, on the Amazon Echo, and in the Anchor app at anchor.fm. Now, Malavika Velayanakala has an article for Tech in Asia discussing Indian startup Quanta Analytics. That's spelled with two T's, by the way, Quanta. It is, on the face of it, not an unusual company. A lot of companies are doing unstructured data analysis. They're doing data mining. You hear about that a lot. So Quanta is doing the same thing. Text messages, documents, email, video, audio files, still images, anything they publicly can get their hands on. They are data mining for trends. They also process data, however, from the deep web and the dark web. And that's not something a lot of companies are doing. And that's a lot more data. What you see in a search engine is less than 1% of the data that's actually available on the web. But this other data is harder to get to for a search engine. Now, Shannon, we should make clear that the deep web and the dark web aren't the same thing, because they're often conflated. Can you give us a definition for these?
Sure. And I'll give you kind of a general idea or some examples, too. So think of it like a glacier. I'm sure you've seen those pictures on Google if you have ever searched for deep web versus dark web. At the very top, the only thing that you can see from the boat is a very small percentage, which is the regular searchable web, which includes things like Google and probably your Squarespace website and, you know, anything that you can search for from Google and Yahoo and Bing and all those different search providers that consumers use. And then right under that is the deep web, and that is the biggest part of the glacier. And that is going to be anything from like library information that isn't necessarily searchable from Google or from Bing or Yahoo. It could be government data that they store on servers. It could be any information that a company stores that's not necessarily searchable. After that, you have the dark web, which is a smaller percentage of the deep web, but is a part of the bigger deep web. The dark web is where things are hidden that you can only get to by like a specific IP, for example. So that would be things like on the Tor browser, which you can only get to on the Tor browser, like Tor websites. And that also includes a lot of illegal activity. So whenever, like I do ThreatWire, whenever I talk about somebody selling malware on the dark web, that's what I'm talking about. It's like an IP address for a forum that you can only access through the Tor browser, for example, which is where a lot of things like that happen. However, I also want to mention too, and you mentioned this to me earlier, Tom, they're also used for good, for things like whistleblowers and journalists, so that they can share information without it being searchable too.
Yeah. So, I mean, you could argue that the dark web is part of the deep web, I guess. And I think that's why they get confused, because the deep web just means stuff that is not immediately obvious. I mean, Facebook is the deep web, because the search engine can't go in and index Facebook. It's all behind the login, right? But it's public if you can log into Facebook. So it's not, the deep web isn't wrong. It's not finding private information that's encrypted and hashed. And, you know, it's not like that. It's just stuff that isn't right there easily indexable by a robot going around. Right. You have to have a login. And so being able to data mine the deep web is a big advantage for Quanta. What's funny is in this Tech in Asia article, they had a hard time convincing people that they had anything beneficial, because they'd go and they'd talk about the deep web and people would say, I don't know, sounds fishy. I don't know if you can really do what you say you can do. And they mentioned that in a few cases, they said, well, give us the first 2 years of a 3-year period and we will tell you what you did in the third year based on that data. And some companies took them up on that. Others were like, yeah, we're not giving you 2 years of data.
And I think that's because there is this huge misunderstanding about what is involved in the deep web or the dark web, because every time you hear about them, both of them really, all you hear about them is when people are selling malware or viruses, or when people are buying illegal porn or illegal guns or whatever the trade might be at the time.
Yeah.
So there are potential possibilities, just like what Quanta is doing in this case, where they are purchasing information or using information from the deep web and working with these companies to, you know, help them market better or maybe help them grow their companies.
Yeah.
Of course, with that said, there's also a potential for privacy issues there for consumers.
Yeah. The clients include like banks. State Bank of India is a client. McDonald's is a client. Starbucks is a client. A lot of what they do is to say, hey, if you made a bunch of sales one day, we can tell you the people you didn't reach that day based on our data mining. And we can help you figure out how to reach those people, because, again, they're going after this non-obvious data out there. They on their website, one of the things they offer is personalization. So they say there's a wealth of data that our customers are leaving in the digital world, from what they do, where they live, what they like. Data is being made available like never before. It is vital to blend this data to create a single view of the customer, one that you can use to understand your best fit. So it can sound like they're doing something nefarious, like they're hacking into to private databases, but they're not. They're only going after things that are a little harder for a normal search engine to get. If you want a good example of the deep web that has been around since 1991, go to vlib.org. It's the www virtual library, which is maintained by humans, but it links to things that you can't get to from a search engine. It is one of the oldest examples of the deep web. And there's loads of others out there, some of them shadier than others, where they say, hey, we can search the deep web for you. This, I remember we did stories about this on the screensavers, like back in the 2000s. So there's nothing nefarious about searching the deep web, but you do have to keep in mind what Shannon said. You know, there are privacy implications here, like you are leaving a trail that you may not realize you left.
Right, exactly. And with that trail, like, for example, one of the customers that Quanta has is Starbucks. I have a Starbucks card. I go to Starbucks all the time. I also use Facebook all the time. Is there a way that Quanta is analyzing where I'm purchasing from, which Starbucks location I'm going to, when I go to them, what day, what time, what location, and what I buy? Are they going to use that information and cross-compile it with the information from my Facebook profile that's currently public?
No, it's a great example, especially for people who check in on Facebook, right?
Yeah, and it can be somewhat creepy when you start thinking about it from a consumer perspective. Like, yeah, it's great for businesses because they'll be able to, you know, they'll sell and market more. They might be able to bring down costs if they can get to more customers, which could be a potential a positive route that this could go in. But of course, you know, how much information do you want to give to these companies? You might have received mail, for example, in your snail mail inbox, like right on your street corner, from a magazine that's selling some goods to you that you have never bought from before. And that's because your information was sold to that company. And now they want to market to you because they think that you will like their company too. what is Quanta going to do with your information? Are they just going to use it for that company, or are they going to sell it to third-party marketers? Like, we don't necessarily know. So for me, from a consumer perspective, I am a little bit concerned, and I will continue to use my security settings and all those to make sure that they can only get the information that I want them to get.
Yeah.
But outside of that, there's certain things that I don't want them to market to me, just because I prefer my privacy that way.
Well, and a lot of what Quanta is doing is not in on the individual level. It's on the aggregate right. level, right? They're using neural networks to process trends to say, ah, your customers like this kind of thing. You should do that. And that stuff is good. It may creep you out a little, but it's good because it makes for better services that are more attuned to what you actually want and don't annoy you. Where it gets bad is when they start to do things that you don't want because they want them more than you. And that happens a lot yes. in marketing. And also, this can be used for surveillance and intelligence. And in fact, Quanta sort of hints in this Tech in Asia article that they'd really like to work with some of those clients that Palantir works with.
I'm sure they would.
Yeah, which is, you know, big government money, right? So, it, like you said, it becomes more important to know about your privacy settings. It reminds me of that tool we were talking about yesterday, Plus Privacy, which I'm still waiting to find out a little bit more about the Operando project that operates it. But if that turns out to be clean, as I suspect it is, that's a really good tool to help you stop the Quantas of the world from having information that you don't want them to have.
Yeah, I'll have to reach out to some of my InfoSec buddies and see if anybody has really done a deep dive into Privacy Plus, because it sounds like a very interesting tool. And that's something to consider for all consumers is, using Signal so that companies can't track your text, using different ad blocking systems on your web browser so that websites don't collect your cookies. Things like that will help you. But of course, it might have a drawback from that business perspective. If a business is trying to grow and if you would benefit out of them growing, how much information are you going to allow them to collect on you?
Yeah, I mean, I bet most of you have signed up for a newsletter or dropped a business card into a thing to get a free lunch or something because you think, I don't mind. I like this pizza place. I like this clothing manufacturer. I don't mind if they know that I like them, right? I've taken to doing that. I use Google sometimes on purpose because I'm like, yeah, this is the trail I want to leave. This is the part that I want them to know that I'm interested in. I am interested in science fiction. I am interested in this and that. And then there are other things I go and use DuckDuckGo for because I'm like, yeah, I don't want businesses to have any knowledge that I, you know, am looking up this medical information or something like that. So, you know, there are lots of very simple things you can do if you think about it to take control of your privacy.
I am a couponer. I shop at Safeway and I have a Safeway rewards card, for example. Safeway markets coupons for the things that I buy frequently. And that is because I gave them that information willingly. However, I know that I'm giving up a little bit of my privacy. Yeah. That's great examples, Tom.
And that's why I was always Mrs. Gonzalez at Safeway. Oddly. Hey, thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com and facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow. Real quickly, Kenji wrote in and said, "Hey, Tom, Shannon, Len, and Roger. It was interesting hearing you question whether companies might start paying consumers to reduce their privacy settings and share more. Verizon is essentially doing that. They just launched their Verizon Up Rewards program." This is kind of similar to the Safeway thing. "This program requires enrollment in Verizon's Selects Information Sharing program. The Verizon Selects information use is pretty scary because information shared includes information about your wireless device and how you use it, including web addresses of sites you visit, similar information about apps and features you use, as well as device and advertising identifiers, your postal and email address, and Verizon does not necessarily anonymize the data. We do not share information that identifies you personally outside of Verizon as part of this program, they say, other than with vendors and partners who work for us. We require that these vendors and partners protect the information and use it only for the services they are providing us." Kenji says, "I love my rewards program, but decided this one wasn't worth it."
Yeah, I love that last sentence in there where they're like, "We require that these vendors and partners protect the information." How are they making sure that they're protecting the information? What is Verizon doing to verify that? Are they getting audited every year by a third party source? Are they publicizing that third party information from a security
audit?
Maybe
they are.
No.
Yeah. I doubt it,
though. We don't know.
They fight against transparency requirements all the time, but the FCC. So my guess is they won't if they don't have to.
Nope.
Yeah. Well, that is it for this episode of the Daily Tech News Show. Thank you, Shannon Morse, as always.
Thank you for having me on.
Go check out TechThing, TechThing.com, and Hack5, HAK5.org. Anything in particular to tell folks about?
Oh, let's see. Well, since we last talked, we got back from DEF CON, and it was amazing. So we have just posted a ton of interviews from the convention over on HAK5.org. Also, I'll be heading to see the eclipse down in Oregon this weekend. So I'm hoping that I'll come back with some photography ideas for everybody that I'll be posting on techthing.com as well.
Excellent. Check that out. Also, Len Peralta has been illustrating the show, and you've got some deep, deep web going on there, buddy.
I do have some deep web. You know, when I was a kid, there was a book that I had that showed different medical conditions for kids, you know, like mumps and measles as monsters. And that's sort of a take on this. I know that the deep web is not a bad thing. But I decided to do it as if it were a monster, draw it as if it were a monster. So the monster here is this creature that's taking all this information from the deep web, and it is excreting it out to a few little science guys who are saying this deep web data is great.
Well, the deep web is the papers going into the monster's mouth, right?
Exactly.
The monster is the data mining.
Yes.
And then you got the guys
and
looking
then,
at what's coming
the
out of
the data information, right? Yeah. It's using that information for whatever they're going to use it for.
Yeah.
So, that's so cute.
Yeah, it's not, it's just a physical representation, a visual representation of what I feel the deep web should look like. And there you go. So just next time you think about data mining, think about it this way. And it's much more fun and much more interesting.
A giant deep web monster biting all of the data.
Getting all the data and then excreting this little tiny thing that ends up looking like paper in the guy's hand.
At the end. Go to LenPeraltaStore.com, buy this digital print or the paper one, and the next time someone asks you about data mining, just point to it.
There you go. It's perfect. It's a perfect illustrative example of what, you know, you've just taught someone tech. So there's another.
I feel like the scientist should wash his hands after handling the paper.
Well, you see the one guy's wearing, he has gloves on.
Yeah. But the guy touching the funnel doesn't. Mm-hmm.
What does he know?
Yeah. Mm.
questions, lots of questions.
Like I said, go check it out, LenPeraltaStore.com. Thanks to everybody who supports our show directly at patreon.com/DTNS. We just need 17 more patrons to keep our goal of always having at least one more than the month before. And thanks to everybody who's been signing up. We want to hear from all of you too. Go to our survey, dailytechnewsshow.com/survey, and let us know what you think about the show. We've just got a few questions. One of them's about coffee. It's an easy one. So go check it out, dailytechnewsshow.com/survey. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC at alphageekradio.com and diamondclub.tv. Our website, dailytechnewsshow.com, and we will be back on Monday with Veronica Belmont. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Good show.
Yeah, that was super fun.
Yeah, that was great. Thank you.
I liked it.
I liked it. What should we call it?
For the titles?
Showbot.tv.
AT&T loses its pole position. Zenfone and the Art of Motorcycle. Oh, I get it. This one's kind of funny. Zenfone and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance.
That's good. I like that too.
Tom, a.k.a. Mrs. Gonzalez.
I just voted for that one.
It's because I should have explained this in the show, but I used my phone number from my house in Oakland to sign up. But I didn't change. I didn't sign up. I just, when I was at Safeway one day, gave them my phone number and they're like, oh, okay. And it worked. So I guess Mrs. Gonzalez had that phone number before and signed up for Safeway.
That's fine.
But I would get my receipt and it would say, thank you, Mrs. Gonzalez.
You know what I learned when I got my cards for Ralph's? For Ralph's down here, they just gave me the card and asked me to sign up online, and I have never signed up. So I guess I'm a generic.
But it still works.
Yeah. Yeah. Works totally right. I just go through.
Like, enjoy your purchase, Mrs. Gonzalez.
The Android Eclipse, the moment of Zen phone, totally eclipse, oh, the smartphone. Judges pull arcing ruling on AT&T.
Polarizing, not arcing.
Oh. Whatever. I think
polarsing is a, like a sport in Greenland or something.
Polarizing.
Polarsing. That sounds like something you do in a bar after you had one too many drinks.
Yeah.
We're going to go polarsing. Oh,
wait here. A Quanta of Solace.
Ah, nice.
I like that. That's cool.
Fish Friday, Zen 64. Today on CyberCore.
The web is like coffee deep and dark. Or Quanta of Solace.
Quanta of Solace is pretty good. Yeah.
I don't know. Tom, a.k.a. Ms. Gonzalez, is at the top of the list.
It's shooting up the charts there.
I always pick the ones that are about the main story. Yeah,
true.
But Mrs. Gonzalez, come on.
I'm a nerd.
Deep Dark Malicious. Let's see, what other do we have? The data is all mine. The first web is the deepest.
The first web, the deep. What? The first what?
First web is the deepest.
The first web is the deepest.
Okay, so, Tom, what was that? What was that Russian word again?
Молодец.
Молодец. Молодец.
Yeah, write it down.
Let me see if I can ever come up here for a second.
Молодец.
The web is like coffee, deep and dark. Unless you get an iced coffee, which has a lot of cream in it, and then it's true. Dark or deep.
I like my coffee like I like my web, deep and dark.
You mean dark and bitter?
Yeah, that's also the way the web is, isn't it?
Dark and bitter.
Chuckle.
I'm leaning good towards Aquana of Solace at the moment, but I'm okay. Persuadable.
Cool. Isn't Solus, or wait, Solace?
It should be spelled S-O-L-A-C-E.
Got it. Yeah.
That's just a typo, though.
Solace.
Solace, man. Solace.
Solace.
I like my coffee black as midnight on a moonless night.
No.
Everyone got really quiet.
I'll dance.
Okay, we were waiting for someone's daughter.
I'm waiting for it to come up.
She certainly won't know anything's up if we're all just sitting here staring.
Why does it smell like pancakes in my room?
So, to explain the horrible hat on my head, it is my Greenville Junior High sports team hat.
Jeez.
Circa 1986, this hat. No, wow. Wait, no, older than that, I think. 83.
Did you play the opposing county? Or, like, how many junior highs were there?
There were five junior highs in our county. There was Keysport. I think there was Keysport. Mulberry Grove, Pocahontas, Sereno, and Greenville.
The Blue Jays. They're stealing that right from the Toronto Blue Jays.
We had it first.
Isn't there some sort of licensing thing there?
That's, yeah, we should have gone after the Toronto Blue Jays because they didn't come along until 1977.
Hey, all right, you got to stand right here.
Oh, boy.
No, come here.
She's like, I don't trust you, Dad.
You know, Tom, right? So did you make your stuff? Did you make the, what was that stuff called? Potato cake. But there's a potato cake. What is it called, though, in Russian? Oh, did you make it? Did it turn out all right? Oh, maldiets.
Oh, my.
That was awesome.
She's like, you made me come all the way up here for that.
I know, yeah. Thanks, Dad. That's Tom said to do that. So, maladies.
Dad jokes on fleek. Dad jokes on fleek.
Oh, what did you say? She said something. What did you say? Oh, I can't know what that is. Yeah. Oh, good work. Yes. Good work. Nice job. Maladies. No. How did you know that, Tom?
What?
How did you? Because you took a class.
I took Russian in college. Yeah.
You took Russian in college. So there you go. There you go.
He's also a double agent.
And also,
he's a double agent too.
I'm also a sleeper agent who has nowhere to go now.
He just slept a very long time. In fact, he overslept.
It's funny.
What were they called? No, what were the what are the Americans called in the show The Americans? They're called something.
They're called
there's a term for that kind of agent, that long term. I can't remember now. Crap. None of you guys watch The Americans.
Sleeper agents, espionage examples. Illegals program is
the illegals. The illegals. That's what I think I'm thinking of.
Back to the border with you Russians. Spies that sound to look like Americans. Quit right. Buying our homes.
I am going to log off because I got to go get ready to go see my movie tonight.
Ah, okay.
Have fun.
Yes.
Well, do svidaniya.
Do svidaniya. Yeah, about those movies, if it were a little bit cheaper, I think 35 is probably a good cost. 50 is a little bit
too
high.
So would you be okay if it's a month old, if it's 30? Because that's the other price point.
I would be because I normally don't see movies until four weeks later anyway.
Well, you know, if I'm taking a bunch of people to see a movie, I'm going to be spending about $50 anyway. So I want to feel like I'm getting some sort of value.
You want to get the discount. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're getting the convenience of being home. I think that's what the studios are thinking.
I guess so. I'll be interested to see if it even happens. That'll be interesting. Me too. And how do you police that to make sure that they aren't showing it off at a bigger room with more people?
You can't make sure. Well, I mean, it's actually pretty easy to find out if someone's advertising for large crowds. So I don't think they care if you invite a few friends over, but if somebody tries to like set up a fly-by-night theater that's asking, you know, hundreds of people, then that's easier to find.
Possibly. You know, maybe there's something that knows that it's being run through a large, through a projector or something.
Yeah.
You know,
well, what
like
if you have a mobile projector and you're just driving around in your little minivan? Like,
yeah,
that's
I mean,
mobile.
I don't think they care if that's that's they're not worried about.
They
that.
Just need to partner and be able to sell you like hot dog buns and hot dogs and microwavable nacho cheese,
right. Chicken fingers,
yeah,
boneless wings.
Because, yeah, I mean, if you put it through a projector, that's just what you might be doing at home. That's not going to raise any suspicions.
That's so funny.
If you start watching it three times a day.
Yeah. It's only a rental, right?
Yeah, exactly. You don't get to keep it.
Yeah, and the biggest benefit for the movie theater owners is, hey, look, we can do surround sound. We can do all the latest technologies you're not going to get from your Uncle Bob. You know, who has a ratty ass couch and like he has a 50-inch screen TV, but he has a sound bar. You know, you won't get the same impact.
Yeah. I mean, I went to see Dunkirk in IMAX. I'm really glad I did that because that was way different experience than watching it on my couch. On the other hand, like the latest romantic comedy,
Right.
Yeah. Those are the movies you can watch while you're doing something else.
Yeah.
Because they all
Candy Crush
or something. Pretty formulaic.
Yeah.
But there might be some movies that are in the middle there where I might say, well, I don't really care about seeing it on the big screen, but I'm curious. So I'll pay the $50 to watch it at home. Yeah. Although it becomes harder for me because it's way cheaper for me and Eileen to go see a movie.
Right.
Partly because she works for Fandango. But even aside from that, it's way cheaper to go see a movie because it's just two people. That's $24, maybe $30. You're not going to be paying $25 a person.
I would pay the $50 if it were released simultaneously. I mean, you know what I mean? But
definitely can't get the theater owners to agree to that.
Yeah. No, they can't do that.
Yeah, but once you start factoring kids and other things, it's just, you know, it'd be nice not to have to deal with a lot of the hassle of trying to get to a movie theater.
Yeah. Well, enjoy the eclipse, everybody.
All right.
We'll
you too. I hope we make it.
Yeah,
we'll never eclipse you from our heart, Len.
It's a total eclipse. It will be a total.
You're
eclipse.
Our Bonnie Tyler.
Actually, a 74% eclipse here. So
you know she's doing a special Royal Caribbean tour for the eclipse. Yeah,
is she really?
She's going to be singing that song during the eclipse. has nothing to do. I mean, it's only metaphorical in her song, and it's about love. It's not about the physical, but whatever.
How does she know when, like, during, I guess during the peak of that would be whenever.
No, they know where it's going to be, and so they're just going to move the, you know, the ship out there. And then you
cool.
I mean, you're on water.
Right in the middle of this of the country. They're going
to go out in the ocean because it yeah. keeps going.
No, I got you.
The eclipse occurs over the ocean.
It's a riverboat on the Mississippi.
You go gambling between darkness.
Actually, no,
I have a bunch of cereal boxes for me, pinhole little things because I was too late on the glasses. So we're going to do that. So, yeah,
there'll be a lot of chanting.
Riverboat stay on the safe, everybody. Cool.
All right, you too, Len.
Stay safe.
Look at the sun.
Don't look at the sun. Bye.
Don't look at the sun, guys.
Don't look more at the sun than you normally do.
Yeah. Sure.
Don't look at the sun. Don't ever look at the sun.
Don't ever look at the sun.
The sun burns like lava.
Ah, Rich. The day star. The evil day star.
Day star. Screw that. Day star.
You and your day star. Your stay inside partially occluded day star.
You mean the close star. Why would you call it a day?
Did you ever go to any of the Mississippi riverboats, Shannon?
Me?
Yeah.
I rode one.
Like the riverboat McDonald's?
I rode, well, not the like official ones down in Mississippi, but they had one up in the St. Louis.
Yeah, no,
St.
I'm Louis, thinking of the ones in St. Louis. Yeah.
Or whatever river that was.
That's the Mississippi by St. Louis.
Is it?
I used to go to the riverboat McDonald's in St. Louis.
Did you really?
Yeah.
I wonder if it was the same one. But yeah, I rode on one once. It was
so
fun.
That would be kind of cool for the eclipse. You could find where it crosses the Mississippi and hang out.
Yeah. Totes.
Sure.
Totes.
Yeah. Why not?
I'm excited to see it. I'm pretty sure me and my friends are going to like drive to a countryside in the middle of nowhere and just like jump out of our car and watch it.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to watch it on TV.
Yeah.
You're not gonna grab the sacred stones and put them in a semicircle and start chanting.
I am not going to cover myself with red clay. No.
I have a friend who's going to the like hippie love fest up in Oregon. I forget what it's called, but there's like 30,000 people that are going to it, and apparently the traffic was really bad yesterday because everybody was driving up to it. But it's this like weekend long hippie thing that everybody's getting together for. What is it called?
What are they going to do? Just do like a music festival or
dance?
Make love? Dance? Smoke pot? Is it going to be like the gathering of the juggalos except with hippies?
Yes. I'll ask my friend that's going because I'm pretty sure I'll see Snapchats. I'm sure. I'm making up my own words.
That's perfectly cromulent of you. Oh, crap. I forgot to change the title in the ID3 tags. Oh, well. I'll change it here. What did we call it? What did we decide on? Did we even decide? Who am I? We
decided on...
Quanta of Solace. That's right.
Yes. And you would change it to S-O-L-A-C-E.
Yeah, spelling Solace. It's not going to be that, the ID3 tag. So, sorry about that. They spelled Quanta right, though. Good job, KB. Okay. Well, folks, stay safe. Enjoy the eclipse, whether it's a Mitsubishi or a solar one. And we will talk to you on Monday.
Yeah.
Goodbye, patrons. You get my special wishes of a happy occlusion of soul. So have some soul food.
Just remember to watch out for aliens during the eclipse because that is the moment of totality from spaceships as well.
Yeah.
Is it?
It's perfect cover. Perfect cover.
Wouldn't it be better just to come at night?
I mean, you say that because you're not an alien.
I would say you would wait until all the planets are aligned.
Shannon's just saying be careful. I think that's wise. All right. Yep. Stay safe.